I remember one time, you know, I had gotten a bonus because we had a bunch of students that enrolled 1 month. And I heard about one of our students, Mario, at the time that had, they were having a hard time. I don't know if it was making rent or paying the light bill or something. And he goes up and he smashes his piggy bank and brings all his money down to his parents. And I mean, so selfless. And his dad's bawling on the side of the mats, telling me this story. And he's like, he's been saving for years to get a, I think it was a PlayStation 2 at the time or whatever it was. And, you know, I turned around and looked at it, thought about it for a little while and prayed about it. And I really knew that I was like, cool, you're going to take some of that money. You're going to go buy this PlayStation. You're going to show up to their house and you're going to give it to Mario. And I maybe have told that story four times.
Hello, this is Lance Farrell with Life at Level 10, where you get inspired to live your best life. Hey, this is Lance Farrell. I've got a very special guest today by the name of Brandon Miller. Brandon has been in my life since he was just a little bitty guy, and he's been just so incredible. I actually have him as my unofficial adopted son, and this is Brandon Miller. Brandon, how are you doing today?
I'm well, thank you. That's high praise coming from you. I appreciate that.
It's true. So you started Taekwondo at what age?
I was 5 years old when I started martial arts, way back in the day at our first Taekwondo location. And yeah, kind of following in the footsteps of my uncle that was doing it at the time. And he brought me in as a young buck. So
that's I remember him bringing you in. What was your life like back then? Tell us about Brandon.
So we had recently moved from Waterloo, coming to Des Moines area. And, you know, kind of crazy at that point, my parents were still together. We kind of had the family, my younger sister, you know, we all moved down here and stayed with some family for a little while until we got our own place and, you know, adjusting to a new school, new surroundings, new, you know, church life and circle of friends, all those kind of things as well too. But a lot of that revolved around just the family that we had that was in the area that we got to hang out with, stay with, you know, do those family functions with. And I really think that that's a big reason why it developed into joining up with a martial arts family like Farrell's, because we could see that people really cared about each other. And that was the environment that we were used to and that we were looking for more of. So
you mentioned your uncle, Jamie Taylor. He was a mentor for you way back then, right?
Oh, goodness. Still to this day. I was just texting with him a couple of days ago, talking about some life stuff that's going on and, you know, definitely value his feedback. But yeah, back in the day, awesome, super father figure for me. And with the breadth of our family history and kind of when people had kids and nieces and nephews, all the things, I'm the oldest. And so my uncles weren't that much older than me. So I really looked up to them kind of like that big brother, but role model and, you know, somewhere in that 10, 12 year range. And then I've got some nephews that are behind me about that far too, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. And I really remember Jamie being like a big brother to you. I knew he was your uncle, but it just felt like a big brother relationship.
Yeah, I would say that's 100% accurate is the way that I felt about it. And you know, that's always looking out for me, always giving advice, but he knew when to press into a lot of things and use his intuition on that. And I'd like to say most of the time he was right. So.
So tell me about some struggles you had in martial arts or in life when you were going through as a young boy.
You know, I was thinking about a memory just earlier today about how like not breaking my first board with like a sliding side kick. I think I was maybe a gold belt or an orange belt at the time. And I really remember vividly it happening and not being able to break through that, not being able to accomplish that. And that really bothered me. And thinking back to why that might be is there's other things that were going on in life, whether it's, you know, dealing with some bullying or seeing other kids bullied too, and maybe not choosing to stand up in those younger years for those people, or looking at the disadvantages that some people had and kind of why they were put in the place that they were. That was a big one as well too. And then as you know, my martial arts journey kind of got a little while in, a couple years in, promoted to a few belts. Our family started having some issues. So my mom and dad split up, they got a divorce, and there was this kind of chasm that was there as well too. And that was, I could always go to Farrell's. I could depend on, you know, great role models that were going to be there, strong men in my life that were there as well too. And That was a big portion for me. And it was great because it wasn't just that it was the staff and the people, the instructors, but my uncle was on staff as well too, there for quite some time. So it was like, I got extra time with him, you know, around and about. So, yeah, I think a lot of the struggle too with that would had to play back to identity and knowing that, like, who was I in the world, compared to what everybody else in the world is saying, but going to guys like Jamie, yourself, and Todd Doerr, you guys being able to look at that and say, well, here's what we see greatness in you. And we want you to see that greatness in yourself. And I attribute a lot of that to what I get to do teaching martial arts and leading classes today of someone did that for me. And I get to do that for other people too, moving ahead.
The board break was a struggle because you didn't do it. I know another struggle that comes to my mind was the Junior Olympics. You went to Junior Olympics your first year, I believe, and the result wasn't what you expected or what you wanted. Can you tell us about that a little bit?
Yeah, the early memories of Taekwondo, especially like probably around green belt, blue belt, maybe is what we're thinking of here, is that first time like traveling to a big competition or, you know, competing on a really, really high level as well too. And, you know, I think this is the time when I got kind of the unlucky draw of a kid that was much taller than me and, you know, all the things and, you know, those stories that we make up and the excuses, but really it was just, I wasn't prepared, but how do you prepare a, you know, young kid that's maybe 8 or something like that for, something on that level, but coming back, there's definitely disappointment and, understanding that like, this is just kind of the way that it goes sometimes. And knowing that I always kind of go with the phrases like the more we practice, the better we get. So if we practice quitting, we're going to get really good at quitting. If we practice mm-hmm. perseverance and going back and going over again, then we develop grit and we get really good at, you know, being able to grind out some of that stuff and then understand the fruit that's on the other side of it as well too. So I remember being really disappointed, you know, doing all the travel and all the training and stuff for just a couple of minutes on the mats. And then you're like, well, wait a minute, that's it. I don't get another chance. And, you know, those kind of things. And that continued like throughout my martial arts career of competition, whether it was on the big stage like nationals or some of the local or regional tournaments too, is like I'd win here and there and that's awesome. But then there's always a bigger fish in the pond at some point. So
what was your favorite part of Taekwondo?
I would say my favorite part about Taekwondo is always kicking. I love the development of what those skills are, but then also just getting to, you know, put your foot on something, whether it's a board or a paddle or the bag, you know, those things were really, really cool for me. And I could see, not that I've never been in a fight in my whole life, but I've avoided a lot of fights just because of the confidence and the skills that martial arts gave me. But looking at the piece of it of like, I get to be dangerous in this situation in a controlled environment without being a danger to the people around me. And approaching it from that is like, I heard the other day, it's like, we sweat a lot in training, so we bleed a lot less in war. So when we're in those times of extreme adversity, hopefully we've trained for those times in the, you know, putting in the reps, whether it's the workouts, putting in the reps, whether it's, you know, failing at the tournaments and kind of taking those bumps and bruises along the way. That makes an incredible difference in the situation where stuff starts to hit the fan and all of a sudden we're in a pressure situation and we get to react and we can choose to do something or choose to do nothing, but, you know, not choosing is also a choice. So.
Yeah. And that saying reminds me of another one, you know, why you train in martial arts, would you want to be a gardener in a war or a warrior in a garden? You know, that one comes to mind too. You always want to be the warrior ready. You want to be ready, right?
That's
you're
right.
Still in the garden, you're not causing problems, but you're ready if something comes up. So why do you think you persevered through so many struggles and all the hard work? It's hard work being a martial artist. It's a grueling classes. You're sweating where most people quit. 1 out of 10,000 people that start martial arts ever get a black belt. Mm-hmm. 1 out of 10,000. And you are you 6th or 7th degree black belt now? I can't remember. You
6th degree, working on my 7th.
We're at the same level. And usually an instructor never gets the same level, but I took a little hiatus and focus on the body shaping and you stayed focused on the martial arts. So you have my 100% blessing to get to 10th degree when you're perfect someday, when you die and go to heaven. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
So why'd you stay?
For me, there was a little bit of that prestige. It's just like, there's not many black belts out there, but you know, at Ferrell's, we've been really blessed to have a big black belt following. Not that it's because it's easy, but it's because we set a high expectation, but we know that people raise themselves, they train themselves, they grow and stretch and reach to make that expectation. And it means something, you know, it really means something. And I took, when I look back at my journey, I took 10 years to get the black belt. I mean, when I tell people that we have a 4-year black belt program. So if you start today as an adult or a teen, you know, you promote every time, you don't get injured. You don't take a break. You know, it's about 4 years, but so it's college degree basically. Mm-hmm. You know, I started, we switched belt systems. I was in, I was out. I was training with my uncle Jamie, but then he went to Desert Storm. So my training became less consistent, and then he got injured, and then he came back. And then, you know, so all this, you know, goes through, and I share the story with my students too, because some of them think, well, it's gotta be perfect. And if I miss a promotion, there's tons of setbacks that come along the way. I think I had some really good people in my ear that were saying, you know how much you enjoy doing this. You don't enjoy whatever belt you're at. You enjoy the process of going and being around these people and training hard. And that was a huge part of it. Cause so you develop this community and this family at martial arts, and they keep you coming back. And then someday when they don't want to come, you keep them coming back. And you know, it's kind of the rising tide raises all ships sort of scenario. And so with that, I do remember some tough conversations about wanting to quit. I don't remember the exact words or where we were, how it went down, but it was a matter of, well, if you want to be done, you need to go talk to your instructor about that. And I'm like, no, okay, I think I'll keep going. So I think there's disappointment and there's a little bit of fear and, you know, those kind of things too. But I knew what martial arts afforded me. I knew how much better I was intellectually. I didn't get it then, but I knew like how much better I was in every sport that I played. I knew how much better I was in every relationship, you know, even though I was far from perfect. It was just like, if I wasn't doing martial arts, it was like something was missing. And I'll be one to say too, in the last few years, I realized that I can go and do the same workout and practice the same curriculum and do those things and be totally fine with it, because I'm in love with that and the product that comes from it. And I want to stay up on my own skills for my own family that's training and my students. And at the same time, I always feel like if I'm not learning something new in some other space, whether that's a small group that I'm involved with or learning something new about parenting or even fitness and, you know, workouts, martial arts, whatever that might be, if I'm learning something new and I'm staying true to those roots and doing what I love, that's the best case scenario for me. That's how I'm firing on all cylinders for life. So
mm-hmm. That's awesome. So, you know, we had a great relationship with, since Taekwondo's from Korea, with some of the Korean masters over there. And we had a Master Jung and Master Nam came over from the Korean Tiger team and do a bunch of great stuff for us. And that was right by the time you were graduating high school. And there was an opportunity for you to go over there and visit Korea with them. Tell us about that a little bit. How old were you when you went to Korea? Do you remember?
Oh, goodness. I was 18, fresh out of high school. I got the honor and privilege to come on and teach martial arts full time, like a week after I graduated. And so everybody's going off to college and doing all the things, and I'm already in a 40-hour work week and learning the business and all these kind of things. So really young kid, I'd never flown on an airplane before. So you're going to go to Korea. We're going to fly you in there. You're going to stay with this host family for like, you know, 4 or 5 weeks. And so, I get on the plane at the Des Moines airport and we take we've reached your cruising altitude and beginning your descent. Cause I only flew to Minneapolis. So it was like on the plane, off the plane, I fly from Minneapolis all the way to Tokyo. I almost missed my connecting flight to fly into Incheon and in Korea. And so get on that, get over there. So I don't know, 20 hours in the air, something around that.
That's true jet lag when you do that.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, absolutely. And it was like a difference of like 4 hours, you know? So it was like, that can't be right. Or, you know, I guess we fast forwarded, you know, a extreme amount of time, but my ride wasn't there to pick me up. So the army guys are like, hey, you're probably over here with us, right? 18-year-old punk kid, you know, come on. I was like, nope, I'm good. I've got the address written down in Korean that I can't even read. Hand it to a cab driver. God bless him, because he didn't say, oh, yeah, get in the cab, I'll take you there. He said, well, this apartment complex or living, you know, area, whatever, is actually under construction. So it was an old address where nobody lived there. It was torn down. I'm like, I have no idea what I'm going to do.
You know, so strange country without a ride, without a direction where you're going, with no address.
No, and I don't speak Korean. Yeah. And
it's not like a word. Yeah.
It's in the movie, like the airport lights are shut. It's like, I'm like, oh Lord, help me, please. And so I get on the phone, I call back to the United States. An instructor that happens to be there super early for a class. And he says, call me back in 20 minutes. I will get a hold of whoever we need to get a hold of, and I will tell you what to do next. So my ride that I thought was going to be there was actually in the air flying to America, but he had arranged with one of his junior masters to come pick me up. Well, because of the time change, he only knew when I was taking off. So they had showed up a day early to pick me up. They didn't think about coming back the next day or figuring it out like, hey, is this guy still coming? So they're hauling from downtown in Seoul, where they live, out to Incheon to pick me up. And I get there and stay with Master Park. Incredible experience. His family was so awesome. And I got to stay with one of his students for a couple of weeks, then another student for a couple of weeks. The instructor we originally set it up, Master Jung, came back. I got to stay hit with him for about 5 days at the end of my trip. But it was, a earth-shattering experience for a 18-year-old who's never been on an airplane or out of the country or anything. So, definitely some divine intervention. I'll say that.
What do you think you gained from that trip overall? What are some of the things that you feel benefited you as a person from that trip?
The confidence level was an incredible piece of that. You know, I went over there and I thought I'm going to experience the culture and eat the food and try some different things and see a part of the world that I might not ever see again. But really knowing that the people that were there were so incredibly service-minded, like anything that you need there, it's kind of like they're waiting on you hand and foot, like to the point where I felt sometimes like, I feel bad. You guys are trying to, you know, do all this stuff for me. Like I can do it. But looking at that as a host and figuring out like, oh, so this is how we show hospitality. This is how we can host people into our homes, or even coming back to the business that we were in at the time, like this is how you treat people that are coming into your business or your school, and just being open to whatever that might look like. That was a big one. So the hospitality part of that, how humble they were, was incredible. And then how hard they worked. I mean, the work ethic was second to none. It was a hot season there. So like my black belt was wet by the end of the day and sweat, and it wouldn't even be dry by the next day, putting it on to go back to training again, you know, like throw it under a fan, hang it up, and it's still, you know. So I realized that I could push myself to some really high physical limits that I had never done before as well too. But by the time that I left there, I wanted to be, you know, I'm calling my grandmother on the phone. Hi, Grandma. It's Brandon from Korea. I need your recipe for fried chicken. I'm going to make it for them here. And trying to figure out, okay, how do you make your mac and cheese? Oh my gosh. That was an experiment. Yeah. And they were thankful. I don't know whether they really liked the food or not. They said they did, but it was me trying to give back in a way where I was like, you guys have done so much for me. They, you know, anything that I needed that they provided. And it was a way different culture than we have here, obviously. But I think those are kind of the biggest things. And it's like, if I can do this and not have any experience, I can do anything. You know, going back, I was so much more confident in myself and kind of my ability to stick with something till I see it through. You probably want to spend at least 10 days in Korea to get over that jet lag to enjoy yourself. But about that 30-day mark, I was pretty homesick, and I knew that I had about another week, another stretch to come back. And then, I'm glad that I did when I did, because I got back right before 9/11. So I don't know how long I would have been stuck there.
I saw the confidence in you when you came back. I saw a changed person, and I knew something happened. We haven't really talked about this much at all, so I was curious. The one thing that I did learn that none of your jeans fit when you got back, because your quads grew so big from all the workout you did. Your legs had outgrown your pants.
I got back and I told my mom, I was like, what did you do to my jeans while I was gone? And she's like, they've been sitting in your drawer. I don't know what she's talking about.
But you had learned, because Nam and Jung were on the Tiger team, and you had learned all those aerial kicks and stunts and things. And so talking from missing a board break at Yellow Belt to being able to do flying crazy stuff that people can't imagine. You see these things on the movies now where they're happy people flying through the air. You actually did that stuff when you came back from Korea.
Yeah, no cables crazy. Either. No CGI. It was all me.
And people say that, you know, like, oh, he's your student. I say, yeah, I taught him everything I know with his feet on the ground. But we had, you have started a team. You went to another convention in the United States, and you were flying a little more after the Korea trip. You went and saw Mike Chat, which was the extreme. What was his thing called? I don't remember what it was called.
XMA, Extreme Martial
XMA,
Arts.
XMA, yeah. Just and you started a thing for us called DFX.
Mm-hmm.
Drug-free extreme, right?
Yeah.
And that you had a bunch of good guys, Ryan Bishop, who's one of fellow instructors today still, who's going to be on this podcast in a few weeks too. So that's fun. And you developed a lot of young guys and gals in that team that just did amazing stuff. And talk about confidence booster for them.
Yeah. I think the Drug-Free Extreme demonstration team was one that we put together because we, you know, our message when we would show up at schools or do demos, we'd always want to make sure we share our story, and our martial art class is a big one that came from kind of our patriarch of Master Pak at Iowa State. And I know that you shared this before, is looking at that and saying, you might not remember every technique that you did that day, but you'll remember the story that the instructor shared about integrity. Or you're going to remember what they talked about being honest, or you're going to remember, you know, how important what's going on in society, and then how we can change the world from the inside out by just being great citizens and giving our best, and then expecting that best of the people that are around us. So with the Drug-Free Extreme team, we told people, you put good things in your body, you put good things in your mind, you can expect a good result to come out of there. So we prided ourselves, you know, I didn't have a drink of alcohol till I was 25 years old. I've never used any kind of recreational drugs or anything like that. And it was one of those things where I didn't feel like I needed that to make the impact that I wanted to make on the world. And you know, we see such an epidemic right now of people that are looking to those things to numb the pain, or to put on a mask, or to like, well, I have to do this so that I can function, you know, without having a lot of anxiety and stress. And that's a huge deal. And I'm really thankful that I had some insight on that really early. But the people that we had coming in, they were far from perfect. You know, they had to have good grades. They had to be attending class. They had to be, you know, working on their skills and up leveling their game. But the biggest part of that is just that we got to be around people that were operating at a really high level. And now looking at what they've done with their lives, you know, whether it's being out in California and acting on big movie screens, or starting their own businesses, and just the stuff that they're doing, I thought, man, I always knew that they could do that, but I would have never imagined that they would go as far as they have, and really enjoying that to the point where they're like, I take so much joy in what I do, and I get to make money doing it. That's phenomenal. So mm-hmm. Yeah, school demonstrations, community events, all that kind of stuff too. You know, Chuck Norris back in the day had the Kick Drugs Out of America program. I kind of felt like that was our you know, nod to that, but also mm-hmm. looking at it and saying, hey, we can really impact directly here in our community. And then that doesn't hurt, because parents want their kids to come hang out with the guys that are, you know,
good in mentors.
That frame of mind. Yeah. Good role mm-hmm. models and mentors as well too. So
you mentioned not having a dropout culture, you're 25. And I remember a week before your 21st birthday, you called me and you scared me because you said, can we meet? And I thought, oh my gosh, he's my main instructor. This guy, I mean, you and Todd Dorn, we had such a good team. And like, man, he never called me once to meet. Oh my gosh, what's going on here? Tell me why you called.
So I'm not sure how old I was, maybe around 12, 13, came to the school for an ordinary everyday class, and we got these blue certificates, and the certificate on it said it was a $250 certificate. And you've got a little story behind this too, but basically it said for any of our students who train with us, you know, through their teenage years until they're 21 years old, if they don't use tobacco products, alcohol, or any drugs, then you're eligible for a $250 certificate. And I thought, man, that's a pretty good deal. $250, that's like close to $1 million. You know, I might have to age thinking about it. So I kept it in a manila folder, and I tucked it away, you know, back with my like belt promotion certificates. And when we went to different camps and things like that, we might get a completion certificate. So I had it there, but it was always in the back of my head. So anytime, you know, a great tool that I had was if my friends were doing something I didn't think was appropriate, I could always look at it and say, hey, I'm training right now. I'm training for the next tournament. I'm training for the next testing. So I'm not going to do that, especially to derail the training that I had. And eventually it was standing up for myself saying, I don't need that to fulfill what, you know, to have a good time. I don't need that to fill some need. I'm filling it by being who I am and really going all in on the things that I love. So that certificate was definitely my 21st birthday. I was just nervous as all get out. Even calling to set up the meeting with you. And we had a relationship. I'd worked for you for a few years at that time, full-time and then part-time before that. But I think I was so nervous and excited because it was such a big deal to me. because this is a huge accomplishment. And like, yeah, that's kind of the setup for, you know, the lunch.
So when you called me, I wasn't sure how old you were. I didn't know how old you were. And then I got to thinking about it after a couple of days. Like, I wonder what his birthday is, because you had a specific day you wanted to meet for lunch. So I looked it up, and that was your 21st birthday that you wanted to meet. Now, for those listening, I got to tell everybody where this came from. So my grandmother did that for me for just smoking. She said, when I turn 21, if I don't smoke cigarettes, she'll give me $100. And so guess what I did on my 21st birthday? Hey, grandma, I haven't smoked. Had my palm up, you know, hey, where's the money? Show me
time
the money.
To pay up. That's right.
She paid me. And it had such a profound effect on me, because I had opportunities at Iowa State University and the other places I was at, going to school, wherever, I had opportunities to smoke where friends were smoking, but that stuck in the back of my head. So I thought, how can I make that same impact on the martial arts students in our program? And so we gave out a ton of those blue certificates for that $250 cash if you don't do those things. And, you know, there's been very few given out, but I'm very proud to say you're the first one that got that $250. And yeah, I remember walking into the restaurant with you. It was a Legends restaurant and bar place, you know, and we walk in and sit in a booth. And the gal comes, takes order. We get the order there. And you, I could tell you're a little nervous, but you had that manila folder with you, and you set it on the bench next to you. And I had tucked $250 in my suit jacket, whatever. I had it on me. I was ready to give it to you, because I knew the whole time what you, and you may not have known that I knew.
I thought I was going to catch you off guard for sure.
Yeah. But you were sitting there eating, and you kept glancing down at that envelope that was sitting next to you on the bench seat. I just never forget you glancing down at that. I said, at some point in time, I said, are you going to hand me the envelope or what? I finally got tired of waiting. You handed it to me, and then you teared up and you told me the story.
Yeah, that was, I get emotional thinking about it, because I can go back to that very booth and that time, you know, that we shared together there too. And it was really special, because it was a culmination of so many different opportunities where it could have been derailed. Right. And, you know, I had a lot of people at my back, but that was definitely one of those things that kept me on the straight and narrow more than once. And, you know, thinking through that, it meant so much to me. And I remember telling you that I was like, I don't even want the money. Like, this has saved me so many headaches.
Yeah.
It's probably saved me well more than $250 of issues. I mean, all the things. And, you know, that understanding that, like, it's the principle of the thing, like, kind of like you earn this, but at the same time, it's just like, man, looking back in that hindsight of like all that I gained from that piece of it, you know, a lot of people, they get really stressed out and they kind of figure out like, well, I can't give up sugar, or I got to start working out and I can't give up that me time, or I got to, you know, take care of my health or my kids or my spouse or whatever that looks like. And they can only see what they're going to lose in that moment. Mm-hmm. They can't see all that it's going to afford them and all that they're going to gain, all the magic that's going to happen on the other side of it if they make that decision. And I think that is, that's 100% what I was feeling at the time for sure. Do you remember what the waitress said to us after that?
Oh, that's my next thing I wanted to tell everybody. So we're sitting there glassy eyed and talking about your certificate, and the waitress comes by and said, hey, it's his 21st birthday today. She goes, oh, would you like a shot? Because the drinking age in Iowa was 21 at the time. I don't know what it is now, but you said, no, ma'am. Oh, would you like a dessert? Yes, ma'am, because you have a sweet tooth. That just makes me smile. I'm like, take this money and stop talking about it. I gotta dry my eyes over here. That was a really fun time. That was great memory there.
I agree. And I'm really proud to say that I know at least the second and third person to get that certificate were students of mine, not that like from white belt all the way through, but, and it really meant a lot to them too. They were, you know, I think after that, we kind of did the big check, you know, kind of handed it to them because it was a really big deal. And, you know, that's good for business, because you're like, oh, I want my kid to experience this. I said, but it's even better for humanity. It's just exactly for the community, because that's when we look at those kind of things, like what a small thing, like how much would you pay to go back and say, if I could pay any amount of money to get my kids not to drink, like I know how important that is, not to use drugs, not to smoke, not just in that time while they're developing, but also through in their entire life and what that can really afford them. So, you know, that I encourage all the parents to make that deal with their kids and, you know, have some sort of incentive around what that is. And, you know, let them know that there's nothing you can do to make me love you anymore, but there's also nothing you can do to make me love you any less. This mm-hmm. just might be one of those things to help you to, you know, get through some tough times and, you know, come out on the other end of this a little bit better as well.
Yeah. And it's such a blessing for us to have you being a part of our Extreme Body Shaping program as well, because you have that history with us and you have, I want to say perfect, but I'm going to say excellent technique, because nothing's perfect, but you have excellent technique when it comes to helping people. You're doing our instructor certifications and workshops, and you do go out and do self-defense workshops and that too. You were actually in our first group of 40 people to do the Extreme Body Shape. And I talk about the group all the time. That has me, you, Todd, and then a few other staff, 32 or so moms, basically, they were doing martial arts, bringing their kids to do martial arts. And so it was a really elite group. Everybody had great results. And I think your results were so good, your hair turned blue.
I was wondering if that was going to get brought up.
Of course it was. I nicknamed you Blue for a while. I still call you Blue once in a while. I mean, you had the 6-pack or 8-pack. I mean, you were incredibly ripped. And I was thinking, yeah, it's easy for him. He's freaking 18 years old or whatever you were.
You know, it was quite the experience. My favorite part was, you know, I went to Korea. So we had actually gone to a seminar where we kind of got the material and stuff for this program that we were starting. And then while I was in Korea, I was studying it and doing some of the workouts and figuring out, like, when I get back, we're going to start like 4 days after I get back. We're starting this new session. Like,
we did start 9/11. I remember that 2001, 9/11 was right,
yeah.
right before that, August, I think.
When we looked at doing that, you know, it was interesting because I didn't know a whole lot. And I wasn't in communication with you guys, like staff meetings and stuff like that. It was like 5 weeks where I was kind of left to my own devices of figuring it out. But going into that and being like, you're one of the first coaches, you're one of our first instructors that's teaching this brand new strength training with rubber bands thing. You know,
yeah, you taught 9 a.m. on a Monday or Wednesday, or I taught Friday, and Todd taught one of those two. Which day did you teach?
Yeah, so I was 9 a.m. for a lot of years, and then switched over to Wednesdays at some point there. But yeah, that was good.
Yeah, and you obviously studied it well in Korea because you hit the ground running when you got here. And one of the things, Brandon, I remember seeing, when you were a lead instructor there, you became head instructor for the martial arts at Beaverdale. And you were a young, fit, attractive man. You were single.
Mm-hmm.
And you were very faithful, and you were like waiting for marriage, as far as I know. And you had a lot of moms had a crush on you from time to time. I saw it happen. I saw a mom hit on you like no other. And I, like, you didn't even respond. Like, does he even know she's hitting on him? And I don't think you did. I don't think you realized.
I was oblivious. Yeah. There was a, yeah, I mean, different.
She was a single mom in her defense. I mean, it wasn't like she was being unfaithful, but she had definitely had a crush on you.
Yeah. And there's times where that, you know, me being awkward, like, I don't know how to take this, or, you know, at some different points I had a girlfriend and, you know, whatever else, but, you know, I was really like trying to make sure we talk about our instructor training, like, be personable, but not personal. You know, I'm trying to be professional, and this is the business. And I know that that's not always the way that it goes. But I also knew how messy it could get, you know, in some of the situations, because you're really close with people. You get to know the families, you get to know the students, you care for them like no other. And it is like, they're kind of like a bunch of little brothers and sisters, or they're your nieces and nephews and things as well. And then just understanding too, that, like, you know, this is what I'm here to do, and separating that professional life from personal life. You know, that's always a challenge, but I can tell you that every time that I did that really well, I was glad that I did, because it preserved those relationships for many, many years after that, where I've still got a lot of, you know, some of the families that had parents in that very first 40 people that we started off with.
Mm-hmm.
They're still great friends today, and they're mentors of mine, because maybe they were much older. They already had kids, and I wasn't in that stage of my life yet. But also, how do I act, and what's the expectation for our staff now of what that is? And so that was a big one for me. And I know that you and Todd, a couple of times, you're like, do you not even see what's happening? You got a couple moms talking to you, but then you also got these teenage girls following around, that sort of thing as well too. And I'm like, what are you guys talking about? Like, I'm just trying to come and train some martial arts and so on. You guys like, okay, well, one day you'll start to notice.
And you really embrace the martial arts tenets, the tenets of Taekwondo: courtesy, integrity, perseverance, self-control, and honorable spirit. You embraced all of those. But Todd and I had experienced those same kind of things, you know, going through and being an authority figure. A lot of people have crushes on authority figures. Mm-hmm. And regardless of what it's in the martial arts, it happens. And the important part of that is that we realize, understand it, and not abuse it, because it would be abuse. And that's what you did unconsciously. And that was fantastic how you just drew the line and didn't even think about crossing. Didn't even know when you're being approached, because you had that already embedded in your head. I think probably from some of your history with Jamie, with Uncle Jamie, you know, bringing you along. I remember you needed a place to live at one point. And so I almost laughingly call it Animal House when you and Joey and a few people lived. Anthony lived in a house over on Euclid that I had actually purchased for you guys to live in. Remember that?
Mm-hmm. I do. Yeah, that was a wild time. We were all at different parts in our journey, you know, a couple of brothers and a homeless guy that we had taken in, you know, not guy, man, but another young boy that was struggling, and a few of our childhood high school friends that we grew up with. And we're like, well, we got this big house and we can split all the bills. And, you know, Master Farrell, like, guys, Master Farrell owns this house. We got to make sure we're taking, you know, all the things. And so there's madness, but then there's like, nobody's there for like 2 days, 'cause we're all at a tournament. And then all of a sudden, you know, we're there and everybody's got a friend over and it's just packed and crazy. And you know, so the different things that were, you know, I learned from that experience in the responsibility of that, 'cause up to then, you know, we lived in apartments, we lived here and there, but it's like, we had a little more stake. We had a little more ownership in what was going on. And especially because we knew the landlord and, we were going to go to work and he was our boss too, you know?
Yeah, that was a good time. And I remember one time too, your car broke down. I didn't want you driving to work on a bicycle. And I happened to have an extra car in the garage that I wasn't driving.
That was a really incredible surprise. And, you know, that was, nothing that I ever expected, but it was, you know, there's been different times in my life where people have gifted me things and not always like a car or something huge or big or, you know, whatever that looks like, but, they would go out of their way to do something kind or to do something for me that they knew would mean a lot, or that like you did so generously would meet a need. Thinking about that, it's not any of those things that I ever thought I deserved. And that's probably one of those things that the reason why it happened the way that it did. But knowing the impact of those experiences that were, you know, I remember back getting ready for Junior Olympic camp, you know, you guys are calling all the students and asking my mom, like, hey, is Brandon going to be at camp this year? And she's like, we can't afford it. We don't have the money. You know, we barely got two pennies to rub together to make it work. And so we're barely hitting tuition for Taekwondo and so on, so on. And you're just like, we'll take care of it. Just get him to camp. Just have him show up. We'll figure out the rest and so on. And that was an incredible blessing for me and showed up many times throughout, you know, my journey in martial arts. And sometimes it was parents that did an anonymous gift that causing me to be able to go and do a retreat or, you know, have something repaired or in any of these kind of things that, you know, really, it really was a blessing to me. But the best part about that now that I realize is that I get to do that for other people.
Exactly.
You know, I was always like, I get to pay this forward. Somebody did it for me. I get to do it for somebody else. And, we're just walking through the grocery store the other day, and walking into the grocery store with my wife and, some single dad's putting the kid in the car seat and doing all the things. And he's like, I got the kid in the car seat. Now I got to take the cart back, but I shouldn't leave the kid in the car. And I said, hey, can I take a cart for you? We're walking in. Nobody. He's like, oh gosh, thank you so much. And like, for us, it's just like, I don't know any successful person that just leaves their shopping cart in the middle of the parking lot. Right.
But he would have had a good reason to, if he had to.
Exactly. And so, but my wife turns to me and she says, you know what? I bet that just made his day. I really hope it does. You know, when we do such those little things, so it could be really acts of kindness on a very small scale or a big scale of, I remember one time, you know, I'd gotten a bonus because we had a bunch of students that enrolled 1 month. And I heard about one of our students, Mario, at the time that had, they were having a hard time. I don't know if it was making rent or paying the light bill or something. And he goes up and he smashes his piggy bank and brings all his money down to his parents. And I mean, so selfless. And his dad's bawling on the side of the mats, telling me this story. And he's like, he's been saving for years to get I think it was a PlayStation 2 at the time or whatever it was. And, you know, I turned around and looked at it, thought about it for a little while and prayed about it. And I really knew that I was like, cool, you're going to take some of that money. You're going to go buy this PlayStation. You're going to show up to their house and you're going to give it to Mario. And I maybe have told that story four times, you know, so, you know, it's out now. But that for me was like, it was just such one of those things where I feel so grateful that one of my students did this for their family, or could have been for a stranger, that now I'm in a position to do that. And that shows up over and over in your life. And I think that I was not making much money. I remember having that conversation. I was all excited for a full-time job, and I get home, my mom's like, how are you going to live on that? Like, you can't make a living on. And I think she called you. She's like, what are you doing? You're trying to put my kid on the streets or something, you know? And like, well, it's not forever. You know, a few years later down the road, I got a chance to call my mom and say, hey, I made more money than you did this year teaching martial arts. I was like, this is pretty incredible. And that was, you know, many years ago. But knowing that, like, I could be successful in doing something that I love, helping other people and getting paid to do it, I was like, man, it's a win for everybody. So, exactly. You know, those times that show up as generosity, I've had some scrutiny about people like, I can't believe you accepted that gift from somebody for this and that. And I was like, well, if someone's going to give you a gift, number one, it'd be really rude to reject their gift. But also, I'm always trying to be really conscious of like, what's the motive that they're doing that with? Are they doing it from the goodness of their heart to do that, or to help or to serve because they're in a place of abundance that they can do that? Or is it like, okay, so now you gotta scratch my back when it comes time when I need to pass black belt testing or something. And, you know, that's one of those things I wasn't willing to, you know, compromise my integrity on. It was pretty well, you know, the line in the sand on that. But
yeah, I know you have the philosophy, give without remembering and receive without forgetting. Give without remembering and receive without forgetting. And I know you, Brandon. So I know that pushing that guy's cart back made you feel better than it did him. Yeah. I know that giving Mario the Nintendo game made you feel better than it did him, even though he may have wanted it bad. Because I know you, and I know that's your heart, is you're a giver, and you did pray about it. And you know, faith is very important to you and to me as well. And I think that that's our light post, you know.
The truth about it always is that when you do that, you're always going to get more than you could give until you're blue in the face, but you're always going to get more doing that in those situations where, you know, you can't give if you don't have anything, but you could give your time. You could be of service. You can do those kind of things too. And when you're in a situation where you're able to do that, it's incredible to just be able to release that. And that person, you know, they hopefully are going to see that, remember that too in the future when they're in a position to be able to do that for somebody else.
Well, I can say, and I know that Debbie feels the same way, but she has to feel blessed to have you as her husband, and Avery and Justice. Someday they'll realize how blessed they are to have you as their father. You know, kids in the midst of it don't realize at the time how great they have it, but I'm sure at some point they will, if they haven't already told you how much they appreciate you. But you're also, one more thing, a couple things. I like to joke about this when people see you have this big long beard, like almost like ZZ Top at this point. And I say, that's not a chin under that beard. That's another fist. You know, that always gets a smile. That's a Chuck Norris joke. But you also are an amazing singer. And I'll never forget the time. I actually watched you at the state fair singing on one of those stages with somebody and just thought, wow, he is so good. And then you would sing our national anthem at our Black Belt extravaganzas and different things. And then you started paying that forward and letting students sing, which is great. I remember one time I had you sing a song by Mercy Me called I Can Only Imagine. And it was like, it crossed the Christian music stations into the secular stations and everybody loved it. And I really wasn't thinking about the meaning behind it. I just thought, wow, can you sing that, Brandon? Yeah, I can sing. Okay, sing this extravaganza. Well, you sang an extravaganza. Then I had a Jewish family complain that we sang that song at their son's black belt presentation extravaganza. So yeah, I mean, I sometimes push the envelope a little bit when it comes to Christianity. I don't mean to, but it just comes out sometimes, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's who you are. It's not just what you do. So that's an important part to remember. And I, like you said earlier, our faith is such a beacon, a compass, a light post. Just this morning, praying for some guys at men's group, and he said, all right, we are tugging on the rope of our anchor at this point, because we're in tough times, you know, that there's things that are going on for everybody in every walk of life, but, having that to nod to and go back and sink your roots into again and again, and knowing that it's the truth, you know, facts always change, but the truth still remains. And so if we can build our life on those unshakable truths of, you know, I think the generosity piece and the giving, the serving part of that, that's how we're wired as human beings. That's who we were created to be. So mm-hmm. is it any wonder that we feel so awesome when we do that? And I'm like, ah, you know, you go on a missions trip or you do Habitat for Humanity or you, you know, go pick up trash at the park, whatever. It's just, you get so much out of that. And everybody that witnesses it gets so much out of that and hopefully is inspired to do something similar.
Absolutely. Amen, brother. I love it. Brandon, you're so incredible. You're such an incredible man. I'm so proud of the man you've become. And I hope you're proud too, because you are an amazing person. And is there anything else that you want to talk about that I may have missed?
You know, I think the biggest part for me is, you know, that transition from Taekwondo to the body shaping program. I mean, mm-hmm. that was huge in my life. And I got to kind of see the tiger by the tail of, we did our first session. All of a sudden we put it from one location into the four locations we had at that time. And then from there, it, you know, we had the conversation about, is it a franchise? Is it a license? I mean, we went through a lot of steps in that growth, but I can remember the day when, you know, we called to get, you know, we're calling to get manuals or we're calling to get gear. We're calling to get boxing gloves and hand wraps. We're like, how many of these are you guys going to order? Like, we don't deliver this many to anybody in the United States. This is, and I remember calling you and be like, I don't know that they should have told us that, but like, we've got something that nobody else is duplicating on this scale at this time. And then it was like, okay, well, how do we change this program enough? How do we upgrade the program? How does it evolve into something greater?
How can we scale it? Yeah.
Yeah. And then scale that to be able to impact way more lives that are around and about us. So that has been a real pleasure of mine. And, you know, I still get so much joy out of teaching and, you know, leading the corporate workshops. But the biggest thing is connecting with people and let them know that, like, hey, we're all everyday folks. You know, sometimes I'm the expert just because I'm from out of town, right? But really it comes down to is like everybody in here has an opportunity to be so much for so many people. And all you got to be doing, willing to do is be in service, step out of your comfort zone a little bit, you know, do the training and do it well. I always ask people, like, who wants to do this for a long time? Everybody's hands go up. I was like, so we get to do it really well. Because at some point, you know, we're all just working out between injuries. Right? That's the way that it comes down to it. So let's use what we have. Let's stay ready so we don't have to get ready to do those things in life that we love to do. And for me, you know, my kids are 10 and I want to be able to do all the things, right? I want to be able to run with them and bike with them and climb the mountain and go play the basketball game and do those things. And that mentality of, you know, training on a consistent basis and, you know, always like, okay, we could do this different with our nutrition. Like, oh, that exercise hurts today for my shoulder, so I need to adjust it. Then understanding that, hey, long-term though, we can always kind of up level where that's at by learning more and then training smarter and then passing that on to the people that are in our lives. I think that that's what we're all about at Ferrell's. That's all what we've always been about with FXB. And I'm excited to hopefully see that continue to grow.
That's awesome. We could make a commercial out of you, my friend.
You've done that before.
Yeah, well, we have, haven't we? Okay, that's been done. Well, hey, Brandon, I appreciate it. You have a wonderful day.
Yeah, you as well. I acknowledge you for putting on a great podcast, and we're going to do great things.
Thank you. And until next time, this is Lance Ferrell with Life at Level 10. Please be sure to like it and subscribe if you'd like to hear more episodes.